Welcome to the Whiskey Congress. Honest, open talk dedicated to speaking the truth to those who are open to hearing it.
Black, white, right, left.
Most importantly, honest, bold, and fueled by good whiskey. In Whiskey Veritas, we are Whiskey Congress. Join the evolution.
Welcome once again to Whiskey Congress. I've got my Jim Florentine voice going on because I'm sick as hell, but I'm back.
You're
home
not sick.
I sound like
being
shit.
Dramatic.
All right, whatever. I'm back in my Cleveland studio, our Cleveland studio, with Steve, which is nice. We've been talking to you remotely for a while, but that is not the big news. The big news is we have a guest today, Steven.
Yes, we have Pat Greer here with us from Political Storm. He is joining us from his lavish Brooklyn studio.
From the headquarters.
From the headquarters,
right.
And we just wanted to, you know, collaborate with someone who was like-minded. You know, Political Storm, they have a website, politicalstorm.com. They're also on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all your social media outlets, you could find them. And they span all the different kind of thought processes, whether you're progressive or conservative or independent or somewhere in between all of that. They have it there for you. We've been a fan of theirs, and we're going to begin to work with them. So, you know, Pat wanted to get together and just kind of have a talk, and we thought what better way than to get together on the podcast and via video and kind of have some conversation. So, Pat, welcome.
Yeah, thanks, guys. I like how we got together because we're like-minded. Immediately find out one of you is a Buffalo fan.
Yes.
And then that shit went right out the window immediately.
Well, sitting next to me is a Steelers fan, so.
Right. I mean, I'm a Steelers fan. Pat, you're a Jets fan. Jim is a Buffalo fan. Anybody who's been listening to us regularly know about Jim and his Buffalo fandom. And now with you being a, I guess you would call yourself a true New Yorker, and being a Jets fan, you know, at some point we'll let you guys fight it out to the death.
But you can't, though. Like, somebody had a good point. It's like, you can't hate on other teams that are bad.
Right.
Right? True. It's like, we're bad. Like, we get it enough just by being a fan of this team. So why am I going to hate on your team who suffers just like I do?
We can all agree, fuck Tom Brady.
Right. Fucking true. Tom Brady, true. That piece of shit.
That motherfucker.
Who sells crack to kids, I hear.
Can we talk about his child abuse scandal I heard about?
Oh, my God. My thing with Tom Brady, obviously he beats the Steelers and he beats you guys all the time. And okay, yes, that sucks. But my thing with Tom Brady is that this fucker has the perfect life, right? Like, yeah. He's the NFL golden boy. He wins all the time. He's married to a supermodel. His other baby mama is a hot actress. I mean, Bridget Moynihan's getting up there in age. But still, I mean, you know. Alone in a room with a bottle of whiskey.
Still fuck him.
Right. So, I mean, like, this cat just, he's got a sponsorship with Uggs. You know, I mean, like, come on, man. I mean, let somebody else get a little piece. So, you know, fuck Tom Brady. But anyway, besides all that.
We can all agree on that.
Every man's dream is to have that Uggs sponsorship.
Right.
Listen,
like a real man.
Have you ever put a pair of Uggs on your feet? Like, it sounds shitty. It sounds very soft until you put those soft things on your feet, and all of a sudden you're like, I get it, Tom. I get it, Tom.
I heard they are amazingly comfortable.
A friend of mine had them.
I'll never know.
A friend of mine had them, and I clowned him to no end. And then finally he said, just put one on your right foot. Just put it on. Mm-hmm. And I did it, and it, like, my soul melted into space. It was ridiculous. So anyway.
Change your life.
I will die not knowing.
Okay, John Wayne. So before we're going to.
You can have my Uggs when you pull them off my cold dead feet.
So we'll jump into sports a little bit later. Normally we do a whiskey review, Pat. We normally, it's Whiskey Congress. We're fans of whiskey here. Normally we do a whiskey review, but today, literally today, is St. Patrick's Day. Big celebration here in Cleveland. Jim and I, instead of doing a whiskey review, we're doing Irish coffees because it is, you know, 11 o'clock in the morning. So we don't want to seem like two big alcoholics. We went with the Powers Black Label and a little bit of Kahlua and just some whatever random coffee Jim had here in the studio. And it's a great way to start your morning. So that's going to be our whiskey review for the week. I give it a solid 90.
Wow, thank you. I don't know if that's a review of my coffee or the whiskey, but I'm a bit gravelly right now.
I'm a couple deep, so I'm being generous. So just take it and shut up.
Yeah, why don't you tell them what else you drank, Steve? Mm.
So besides the whiskey review, we'll jump into.
Can I just throw in the fact that you did a whiskey review for breakfast? Like whiskey, the perfect breakfast treat.
Hold on. He drank a Mickey's Big Mouth before this. He brought Mickey's Big Mouth to my fucking home.
Whiskey. Perfect for every holiday and get together and birthday.
Yes.
Waking up.
Again, the name of the show. The name of the show is Whiskey Congress.
He brought Mickey's Big Mouth to my home.
Don't top me with water.
you go ahead and rehydrate there.
Right, you make me leave.
Stop! It's ridiculous. How dare you and your audacity. So, jumping from our dereliction of duty of being good citizens, we're going to jump into the whole political game right now, and we're going to start with Jim and I have what we call the Deadpool. The Deadpool is who from Trump's administration will get punted next. Now, anyone who listens to our show knows that I have been on Rex Tillerson for a while. I've thought probably for the last year or so that he was not long.
You said pretty much from the first. You said first of the year. He had
something. Yeah, I felt that. You know, Rex Tillerson is a guy that, yes, he was the, you know, CEO of ExxonMobil, and he's very, very rich, billions of dollars, but he just has that kind of old school, you know, Clint Eastwood style about him, kind of no nonsense, very loyal, to the point, and him and Trump just never vibed to begin with. And I think that, you know, Rex Tillerson is just a businessman. He's not a showman. He's not here to pump his stature. He doesn't care about ratings or anything like that. He's just there to do his job, which is why he started, you know, at whatever level in Exxon and now, you know, eventually rose to the ranks of CEO. And that's how he approached his job at the State Department as the Secretary of State. And, you know, Trump was more about Trump and bluster and everything else. And their styles just never really merged. And, you know, Tillerson from the beginning was when the whole issue with North Korea came up, Tillerson's whole focus was, listen, we have to do this diplomatically. We don't want to do war. We don't want to go to war with North Korea. Like, yes, could we nuke them off the planet? Yes, we could. But is that the most sensible thing for the region, for us? How does that look to the rest of the world? Oh, by the way, China. Oh, by the way, Russia. So this needs to be handled diplomatically. And then, you know, Trump said, we'll handle it however I want to handle it. And then Trump all of a sudden flips and says, we're going to do it diplomatically. And oh, by the way, Rex, you're fired. And oh, by the way, he fired him the same day that I was switching my Deadpool pick from Rex Tillerson to Jared Kushner. So thanks for that. But, you know, the more important part is that Tillerson is out. So I
have to reset the Deadpool.
Well, one, we have to reset the Deadpool. But, you know, for the country and who replaces him, they bring in the CIA director Mike Pompeo, and I just think this whole thing is intrigues me on a couple of different levels. But Pat, what are your thoughts here with Rex Tillerson, our Secretary of State, being dismissed, and the whole situation surrounding it?
Yeah, I like how you led off with his qualifications, that he's just the guy who's very diligent about showing up, putting his head down, achieving the goal, being loyal, being a character guy, exactly the type of person that President Trump does not want in his White House. As soon as you started going into how well he did his job, it's like, yeah, he's not going to last. Which seems to be a pattern. I don't really know how he operates. I know he thrives in chaos, and things just seem to be set up in a way that works for him. But, you know, you had me thinking that, you know, the next person to go, if that's the case, would be Sarah Huckabee Sanders. Who she seems to be the only other competent person. Yeah, was it?
Yeah, she was my pick after Steve moved to Jared Kushner. Sarah Huckabee, she's easily replaceable, and she has to be just hating life.
Oh, my God, right? Every day. Imagine that job.
Plus the fact that for the first time she pissed off Trump when she didn't say, oh, and he didn't fuck Stormy Daniels. We can come to that in a bit. But you know, when she failed to disavow what we all know happened, it's like,
right.
It's all right. Sorry. Didn't mean to cut you off, Pat. We're good.
No, it's the truth. But she seems to be the only one who's competent. And, you know, for whatever reason in that administration, when somebody shows any type of ability to be effective at their job, they get the axe. And I think he does well in that environment. At least he seems to be, right?
Well, I mean, he definitely thrives on chaos, and he thrives on being, you know, the ultimate axe man. It's just a different environment than I think we've ever seen politically. And again, I know I sound like hammered shit because I feel like it. But
sound great.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
You look good too, buddy.
Thank you. Appreciate that, brother.
Sometimes Jim just needs a little pat on the back. I worry
sometimes
about
it. I
can all up. I give you a little hug to the monitor. Right
there, you
now.
There you go.
Appreciate that. We're going to have some downstate New York, Western New York trash talk later. So let's hug it out now. We can throw down later. So anyway, the guy that I had in the death pool previously, or Deadpool previously, was Jeff Sessions. And I just want Jeff Sessions gone. Or Jefferson Beauregard Sessions, as I like to call him, because that's his fucking name. That is his name just screams, I love being a racist. You know,
he looks like a cartoon character, right? He should be an old racist plantation owner.
Like he fits all like between the name and just his accent. You know, it just all screams it. But I mean, it's also in his actions. It's also the way, you know, he's running the Department of Justice, and you know, he just gave a speech in front of all the police chiefs. And, you know, he's talking to the police chiefs across the country, and he's just like, we support you, and it's all about you, and we're certainly not on the side of these criminals, and it's all about law and order. And I don't understand everyone who's not about law and order and disobeying the law and everything else. Trust me, we are with you 100% and behind you. And you can hear it in his voice that he's trying to make sure he doesn't say the wrong thing. And
still saying the wrong thing.
Right, he's still saying the wrong thing, and like it's like, listen, if this is your best job of cleaning it up, what could he possibly be saying behind closed doors? You know, when it comes to, you know, criminal justice and everything else.
Like, so Pat, one of my favorite Jeff Sessions moments is when he said, "I thought the KKK was all right, then I found out they smoke weed." And he said, well, that's
no,
a joke.
Oh,
yes, he did. Oh, he said that.
He did.
He said that years ago. And then he tried to say, oh, it's just a joke. I'm like, okay, it's a joke, but it's a really revealing joke.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm not 100% convinced it was an actual joke. Because we know that he is dead set against marijuana. And, you know, he did an interview where he was just appalled at the backlash that he's receiving for his... you know, his, you know, him being the antagonist for marijuana legalization. And, you know, I guess I hate to run and sprint to the idea that, you know, because someone is a Republican and because someone is a part of the Trump administration, that automatically makes them a racist. Right, I think that is one of the biggest problems with political discourse on the lowest levels and even the highest levels is these automatic assumptions that people make, right? Like, so I don't want to go to that card, but the problem is when you look at some of these people's history, you know, starting with Donald Trump, going all the way back to, the Central Park Five and the way his father ran properties in New York and just some of Trump's own statements and everything else. It's like, he's not wearing a hood and burning crosses in people's front yards. But I mean, if that's the yardstick, then And then you look at a guy like a Jeff Sessions, or you look at some of these other people, and again, you look at their history, you look at what they've done, you look at how they move politically, what they fought for, and it's hard not to kind of put the pieces together and say, I don't know if you're a fan of us colored folks. Go ahead.
Well, yeah. So, I mean, it's difficult when you bring in the race narrative to it, because now you've pretty much taken discussing their policy and their ability to perform off the table, because now you have to address the race issue. And I'm not really a fan that falls into our discourse, especially in the media, whose job is to really antagonize us to watch. I was laughing when you're talking about Jeff Sessions and you said, it's tough to not think he's a racist when he went to this police dinner and all he talked about was law and order and get rid of weed. And I'm thinking, he didn't say anything about any minorities, but we're so conditioned to be like, wait a minute, you're talking about criminals, and most of the criminals I know are minorities.
Right.
So you must be racist, right? Right. And it's so messed up because our society has reinforced that idea that a person of color is a criminal. Statistically speaking, they are more likely to they.
Y'all.
People like you are the problem.
Y'all
we
niggers?
Will not be silenced.
Y'all niggers.
Don't do this to me, Pat. I have to deal with this enough on my own.
It's messed up that's the narrative. And like that particular population, the population that somehow is involved in that particular area of our society isn't representative of the bigger picture. And I think it's messed up because someone like yourself somehow now has to take the brunt of that policy as if it's like reflective upon an attack against you or anybody else who is a citizen who's not involved in criminal activity. That being said, it's as I make my stand, like I'm starting the revolution. It's hard for their policies to not seem overly biased against, minorities and people of color, because nobody's really doing anything to stop that narrative or to go ahead and clear the air and say, hey, listen, we're just trying to instill law and order. We're just trying to go out there and attack people who are abusing the system. Nobody's doing that. They're allowing the narrative.
I think part of it is, we talked to a guy, Mike Wood Jr., who's a former, he's a military veteran. He was a Baltimore cop for a long time. And then he had somewhat of an awakening and he's a, he's a very bright guy, and we have a text going on with him, and we go back and forth, and he and I, we have these like literally knockdown drag-out fights via text, like while I'm at work, it's a mess. Mm-hmm. Like I'm in meetings and I'm like furious because of Mike, but he would call me out on that statement that I made about Jeff Sessions being racist. And he's just like, well, like you said, Jeff Sessions didn't say anything racist. Why are you automatically assuming that those statements are racist just because he's talking about law and order, which is absolutely correct. He didn't say anything racist per se.
Just so you know, though, I won't bring in that you're racist, because I think that also derails the conversation.
Right, right. And so, moving that forward, though, Mike, at the same time, will tell you that as a police officer, that he was a part of the problem, as a part of the oppressive system, the oppressor, the complex, mm-hmm. and everything else, because of the way the system was designed, right? Like, so, part of that is me making the connection, right? They're right. Talking about law and order, and you, who were a soldier in this particular army, are telling mm-hmm. me that it was designed for a specific purpose and a specific reason that is rooted in racism. And so yep. I'm drawing the connection. But the problem is that in order to have this conversation, I have to spell that out and explain it every time, mm-hmm. right? And that's just not convenient for a conversation or a podcast or a show on the news. And people don't want to hear it. Right. Go ahead.
No, but systematically, it is set up in a way that does have racial biases and does overtly affect a particular racial group more than another group. I mean, that's a fact. And to bring that up is true. But when it's brought up as in they are racist, you've now put this shadow over them that you have to address the racist issue before you can start dissecting their policy. And I think that the media has a tendency to put us in these situations where they've set the terms of our discussion so that we can't discuss anything with a solution attached to it. So while, yes, it's obvious that the Southern guy goes up there and talks about law and order, right, keeping away weed from those people, like, you know what he's talking about. And you right. know what the audience is talking about. And you know when somebody's pro-police and not pro-Black Lives Matter, you know what they're really saying is that your shit doesn't really matter. get your shit together, stop being so threatening and intimidating, the cops won't shoot you. Like, you know what they're saying.
Right.
But at the same time, if you broach that as the point of focus for the discussion, you've now had to address that first than the actual policy they're going after. And so for me, when I see these arguments, it's like, okay, great. Let's say he's racist. Then what? What do we do now? We're going to sit up there and we're going to organize because those go so well. Like, what are we going to do then?
Right. I mean, and that's one of the biggest things that we've – one of the biggest issues that I've had with the last, 5 years or so is – you know, it's just like, all right, we've identified that racism is a problem and our solution is organization and protest. And and for me, to a certain point, like, that all has a place. Like, I think what the kids did for the Parkland shooting and for gun violence, I think that there was, a lot of people said, oh, that's pointless. It's not going to solve anything. And I think it's important because it can represent a monumental moment. Right. But what's more important than those kids leaving school is what happens after, the actions that people, the adults take, the people that can vote, the people that are in Congress, in the Senate, in local state seats and positions. It's what they do next that really matters. And that walkout can still be important because it can mark a point in time. Right. Like, I mean, Selma and Martin Luther King's speech in D.C., those all mark important points in time. But the keys were what happened after to move the civil rights movement forward. So, with all of this, fine, we've identified these people who are racist and everything else. But what are we going, what we actually do about it to resolve whatever issues we feel that may be there? That's the key. Right. Uh-oh.
I ignore that call.
Teachers suspend children who did the walkout. And then you see the comment section like, yeah, teach them kids to get uppity, stand up for their rights. They need to sit down and just fall in line.
You're just doing this because you want a day out of class or whatever,
Right, right. You're just trying to get out, you lazy kids, afraid of getting shot up in school. Oh, pussies. Back in my day, we manned up.
that what you're saying is not wrong. And I, Pat, I don't know if you've heard our show enough to know that I am a gun owner and a former NRA member. I quit the NRA.
See the sweet rifle on the wall.
Yeah, well, that was an assault weapon in his day. It's a 303 British Enfield from 1940 something. But
it's like, oh, okay. Well, yeah, but of course it is.
Of course it is. But
from New York.
I gave up on the NRA after Sandy Hook. I just couldn't be part of an organization that literally told its membership the only solution to a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun. I'm like, okay, you clearly think I am so fucking stupid that that makes sense to you. And also, truthfully, I only joined the NRA because I wanted to join a sportsman's club out here that required me to do it, which sounds a lot like racketeering when it's an Italian guy saying you have to join the,
as he's holding a gun,
right? Yeah. I mean, literally.
You're like, oh, okay, well, that's simple enough. Sure, what do I say?
I will do it.
Need to make a donation to the orphans and whatever. But I'm very anti-NRA. And what they've done, so after the school walkout, they posted a picture of an AR-15 and said, thanks, kids. We'll figure out how to handle our own guns. And I'm like, you fucking...
Well, I think here's... So this is a complex issue, I think, obviously for the country, and we're just like, we're going to transition here. And this is something that we didn't talk about pre-show. But the gun issue is a complex issue for me as a Black American, African American, however you want to identify me. The Second Amendment has been something that's kind of been important for the civil rights of African Americans, right? The Black Panthers were some of the strongest proponents of the Second Amendment. Obviously Malcolm X was, and even Martin Luther King was a proponent of the Second Amendment, and it's been important to kind of our liberation, literally from slavery up until now. So this is, to me, it's not just get rid of guns or let's get rid of assault weapons, because history has shown us in this country, we're not great with how we treat certain people that we don't like. And the one consistent group of people that we don't like in this country happen to look like me, right? And the one thing that has helped us is the fact that there have been people who've been willing to say, grab a gun and go take your rights back.
Did you see the College Humor ad they did where they had the two white guys? They're like, we're here for the NRA. Did you know guns are your American right? And then they have this black militant guy and he's like, yeah, and you all should get armed. And they're like, and he's like, whoa, it's my right as an American to have a gun. And all you people, all my brothers and sisters, they need to get guns too. And then two white guys are like, did you have a license for that weapon?
It's, you know, it's,
but basically they're saying is if you want the NRA to stop putting out guns, you start arming the black communities, which I thought was hilarious, but also like, you know, well, there's some sense.
Maybe there's some sense to it. I mean, because that's, you know, that has been going around the black community probably for the last, I don't know, like 10 years or so. Right. I mean, since this debate has really heated up, it's always been an issue. But since I think over the last 10 years with some of the, you know, mass shootings we've had, it's come up. And, you know, some black people say that in jest, like, right? Like, well, oh, if you want to fix the problem, then we should all start buying guns. And then, boom, they'll outlaw it. Well, I don't know. Like, the NRA and the gun lobby is so strong, they're torn about it, right? I mean, because there's some assumptions that it's a racist organization. And I don't know if that's actually accurate. I think that they're a money hungry organization.
Yeah,
and they're driven by money, and they're driven, and a majority of their followers are white conservative people who may have racist views. But I think the NRA is like, listen, if we can start to arm the black community, right, and get them involved and get them into the gun lobby, and we have conservative whites in the gun lobby, we're that much stronger. Right, so I don't know if the NRA would be that much opposed to the black population arming themselves.
And it'll mess up their agenda. I mean, you know, dude, there is a thing, and I like, you know, Trump's presidency really pointing this out. There is really a strong racial undertone for white America, as they just don't like to deal with black issues.
Yeah,
they don't like it. Turns them off. And I mean,
But my thought is, think about it this way: If I rally up a bunch of black people and say, you know what, in order for us to
police are already on their way, go ahead.
Right. Well, that's a different issue. But if I rally up, you know, every black person that I know, all four of them, and I say, let's go join the NRA. Right. Like the NRA is going to look at that like that's that many more new members. Now, they may not embrace our issues, right? They may not. They're not gonna put me on NRA TV. Although one of their most popular people on NRA TV is Colleen Noir, who's a black guy who happens to be a lawyer, and actually I really like. But then we have these diverging issues because he's a little too amosexual, if you will. But I don't know if that completely ruins their agenda, because I think that when it comes to money, you'd be amazed how people can shift their narrative, right? We've seen Donald Trump do it. Donald Trump was a hardcore left Democrat. And then when it came to running for president, he saw from a dollar standpoint that it made more sense to shift and become a Republican conservative, if you want to go that far.
You know, you're 100% correct. I agree with you. I think overall it would be a great move if you're talking about making progress and giving everybody on board to really solve a lot of these issues. But I do think that if you somehow got the NRA to have to stand behind black specific issues, that you would cause a real huge point for them where they would lose members if they had to step behind that.
Look at Philando Castile out in Minnesota, right?
Yep,
black guy with a concealed carry permit gets shot for saying, I have a gun in this vehicle. And the NRA was cricket
silent.
Like, so they still
won't touch it. And there's, you know, that guy, Colleen Noir, he has only recently, I mean, it's been, you know, a year plus since that happened, only recently has he acknowledged that the NRA may have made a mistake in not supporting that. But they couldn't come out right away because it wasn't clear if he really had a CCW, if it was lapsed, and maybe he was smoking weed. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, which is total bullshit.
Is that one, because like you had before, you have the two groups. You have the police, who it's like police, NRA, they're the same entity. Like, you stand with the police, you're NRA. Like, you're basically the same person. And then you have black people. And so they would have to go ahead and stand on the side of black people. And as you see in the media, that's a constant place of contention for any type of argument where, you know, you open this up talking about, you know, Black Lives Matter, the Black Panthers. And, you know, it's so funny to me that that group was started to give a voice and support to a group of people who seem to have been unjustly killed in a system that allows people to kill them and then get away with it, right?
Right.
Very noble, very altruistic movement. And now they're referred to as a terrorist group, despite not having a single case of violence put against them as an organization. So when you talk about the media, they love to take anything that the black people do. And I'm a white person. I could say this. I don't give a shit. But they do that. This is what they do. And then they try to make it where it's like, oh, you're bringing that up? Why are you bringing that up? It's like, well, because that's what you're doing. Not to say you have to do anything about it or we have to fix it. But like, take your argument and say like, well, if you get a couple of your black friends, all four of them in Cleveland, so it'll be you, LeBron James, and two other people.
Right.
You guys go out there
and two Browns players.
Right. And you go there and you do that. It's good, but it's not. It'd be amazing to see that happen because I'd love to see the obstacles that you face when you start to be the guy who goes out there and like, I'm part of the NRA. I've got my gun, right, brothers? And the white guys are like,
yeah. I mean, and I think it goes one of two ways, right? I think either NRA says, all right, well, it's money, and they shift, or it does create a division within the organization, and then you start to see the obstacles, and then you start to see like sort of all sort of complications. And I think it could theoretically be a win-win either way. Now me starting a movement of organizing black people to join the NRA and get guns, I don't know how far that will go. I think there are a number of people who just for my own safety would be like, nah, bro, why don't you not do that?
I was about to say, it was a pleasure meeting you. I'll be at your funeral.
I will lay a bottle of whiskey at your casket.
Yes, sir.
Hopefully it's open. I think that's something. I mean, I think it's something worth talking about. I mean, some of the people that we've talked to, the idea of even, more people joining the NRA is just appalling to them. And the whole argument should be, let's just get rid of AR-15s and let's raise the minimum age and let's do all that. And then, gun bans and buybacks and all that other thing. And I think if we actually want to truly solve the problem of gun violence in this country, I think the actual answer is, you have to go after the manufacturers and you have to do a massive gun buyback to make it to the point where it only makes sense to sell your gun and sell specific type of guns to then, minimize what's out there. And once you minimize what's out there.
I 100% agree with you. And I think that is a very like pragmatic solution that if put into, use would be something that would have an impact.
I mean, we saw it work in Australia, and Australia is smaller than the US, but it still worked.
You're talking about people who won't even acknowledge the fact that our country has a disproportionate amount of guns manufactured and bought and sold. And that may, this is just purely on objective observation, that may have something to do with the amount of mass shootings that transpire in our country. You can't even say that and have a discussion about that without somebody ripping down your throat, tying you to some side of like some kind of alternative agenda, and then pushing you out into the fields that you're some kind of wacko who wants a gun ban. You can't even get there.
Right.
So to think that somehow we're going to have any type of progress made is ridiculous. And I wanted to just touch on real quick, when people talk about these bans and they talk about making some sort of action to have preventative measures taken to stop any of these assaults, the people just want action done. Do I think that the issues that get brought up in our media are the right ones? Honestly, I don't think any of the ones brought up in our media will actually have an impact that will be effective. I truly don't see how that could, agreed, how that would work in a way, right?
Bump stock and magazine capacity and that's all. It sounds good, but none of it actually helps. Banning silencers.
Right. But the thing is that they just want to see something done.
Yes.
And the government isn't doing a goddamn thing. They continue to just push this away and blow people off. And the issue has become, and the NRA has done a magnificent job to make this an untouchable issue, that any type of action taken against this is somehow that much of an infringement upon your Second Amendment that it can't even be discussed. And they've made it that. So it'll never be touched.
They make it sound like the only reason you're free to say what you just said is because you could have a gun.
Right.
I own guns. Right. I've never had my ability to speak infringed upon. I know people who don't, and they haven't either. The whole notion.
Well, Jim, the reason why is because you have guns.
I've got the 1940s rifle behind me, and that should hold off the government drones.
Well, so the funny thing about what you just said, that last statement that you just said, and this is where, Khalil Noir and I completely disagree, right? His premise is if the government has drones, right, based off the Second Amendment, then we should have access to drones. Right, like his whole thing is we shouldn't be limiting our Second Amendment rights at all. It's that, in, you know, the whole point of the Second Amendment is to, you know, defend ourselves against a tyrannical government. And so if the tyrannical government has a tank, we should have a tank. If they've got drones, we should have access to drones. And that's his kind of thought process on what the Second Amendment is, which I think is borderline insane, because we've got people who can't drive a fucking bike down the road, and you think it's a good idea for someone to have a fucking drone or a tank, right? I mean, like, we already have issues with people. You know, there was a teacher in California who was a reserve cop who shot his gun off in class and injured 3 students.
Right, and I think choking deaths still are the top 10 reasons that people die in this country. So we can't even chew our food. Deaths?
Choking,
yeah,
just own two hands.
People, I guess, choking themselves, like, ah, I can't stop. Right.
No. I mean, amazingly that hasn't occurred in this apartment or this house or has it, Jim?
I 100% agree.
She wanted.
I 100% agree with you, but the argument has gotten so ridiculous that you can't even have an intellectual discussion with somebody who believes that because. You know, if from what I've heard, and I'm not an expert, nor am I a scholar on the Constitution and why it was written in particular instances, but from what I've heard and the things that I've looked into, that was to keep the British from coming into our houses and taking advantage of us, right? This was an outside imperialistic force coming into our area that would somehow try to overthrow us, and that the people should have the ability and means to defend themselves. Not that the government, who, if the government turned on us, there's not a chance in hell any of us. It would be like a Red Dawn is what would happen. Except it'd be probably like the first 15 minutes where everybody gets murdered. Like, we wouldn't be out there in the woods hiding from the government with their heat seeking sensors on their Apache helicopters and every single resource they could possibly want. Like, it's just unrealistic, but they put it out there because you got somebody who's sitting in their lawn chair right now somewhere in the country, whether it's upstate New York, Cleveland, or somewhere in the rural area, or a displacement one here in Brooklyn, who's just like, government comes after me, I'm getting my gun, and we gonna fight. And you're like, no, you're not, though, dude.
First of all, I will not have the work of Patrick Swayze besmirched on the show.
R.I.P.
Rest in peace, Patrick.
R.I.P. No.
Wolverines! I sound like I'm about to drop dead. I never figured out in that movie how the Russians got to Colorado before going over California. I never figured that out.
But really high. That's what they.
Well, they came from the north.
Okay, those Canadians cannot be trusted.
They came right? from the north.
All right.
They show the Canadian guy at the desk. He's like asleep. Like,
I learned that through Game of Thrones. Yeah, I saw how it played out.
Yes,
Lord Targaryen.
All right.
I think, you know, there's the practical solution, or there's the ideal solution, which kind of solves the problem. We know we're not going to get there. And so, you know, as to what you were saying with, you know, all right, we're going to do bump stocks. We're going to raise the age limit from 18 to 21.
Which is a total reactionary.
Yeah.
No,
I mean, the whole 18 to 21 thing, it to me is kind of pointless. I mean, listen, we've had one mass shooter that was under the age of 21.
No, Dylan Roof was 19.
What's that?
Adam Lanza and Dylan Roof were both under 21. But
Graydon, that's not true.
Dylan Roof was 19.
I think Dylan Roof was older. I think he was like, I think he was 21, or maybe he was 19.
He was 19. Fine,
whatever. Either way, we have. I mean, a majority of the shooters have been over the age of 21. That solves a small percentage of the problem. And if you want to say any part of the problem that gets solved is a solution, I guess okay. The bump stock thing to me makes no sense in terms of, you know, people supporting it like that has anything to do with gun control. You know, just, I mean, Jim sitting right next to me could modify, you know, a weapon to basically have a bump stock within, you know, a half hour with some time at Home Depot. So, you know, again, these are all solutions that sound good, but don't really resolve the issue or the problem. And that's one of the big issues that we're facing from just a societal political discourse, is that we're not talking about actual solutions. We're literally talking about duct tape and the Hoover Dam.
You know, not to do a little plug here, but that's why we were created at Political Storm. That's www.politicalstorm.com.
Well done.
Because discussion on these issues just doesn't happen, and that the climate that we live in now, you can't discuss anything with anybody. I mean, even in this short time that we've been talking with each other, we've actually got to look at the issue, and we've even got to flush it out to see that if practically, if it would work, where any type of issue you have online or with anybody else that, God forbid, doesn't agree 100% with you, people automatically shut that person off and go, I already know where you're coming from. I've heard enough. I'm done. I'm going to go back with these jerk-offs who think like me.
Whatever, libtard.
We're going to hang them up.
Right. I mean, it's really – and that's – I mean, that's where, you know, that's kind of the roots of Political Storm, and that those are the also the same roots of Whiskey Congress. You know, Jim and I, we have different backgrounds, but we have similar thought processes on some things. And so when we get together and we talk, we agree on some stuff. We don't agree on everything, but we're willing to listen to each other. We're willing to talk things out. And I think that's important that we have those conversations on, you know, it has to start small scale and then grow in order for it to kind of catch fire.
Right. And like, I don't know about you guys, but I grew up in a bar, right? Like dead ass. My father owned a bar.
Oh,
I
trust me. Life.
And the whole, like the best part of the day was to go to the bar, have some drinks and talk some shit to somebody. Like you find that one guy that, you know, never agrees with you. And you're like, I got that son of a bitch today. And you go up there and you start saying the things that will trigger him. And then all of a sudden you got a good conversation going. And it's like, what happened to that? Why don't we do that anymore? And it just doesn't seem to be part of our.
Well, I think it went from that to no one was willing to say anything, right? Like the whole political correctness thing kind of took over. And you couldn't do that. Yeah. You couldn't do that, like, because you didn't want to offend anybody or whatever. And then all of a sudden, you know, Barack Obama comes and everyone is so pissed off about that. And then Donald Trump comes and rips off a Band-Aid, basically, taking the scab and everything with it. And then it all explodes out. So now it's back. But the problem is, like, no one's afraid to say anything, but everyone's got to say it all to their own individual groups, right? Like, the conservatives sit on the one side of the bar, and the liberals sit on the other side of the bar, and then there's just, like, the three of us in the middle of the bar, like, hey, you know, we're buying shots and beers. Why don't you all come over here to the middle, and let's hang out?
And you know what, though? People aren't very self-aware, and the problem is that both sides, the left and the right, they're the same person, with just different areas of contention that they want to latch onto. And it kills me.
You good?
Yeah, can you hear that?
Is that the government coming for you?
Well, they heard you were getting that black militia together, so they
couldn't figure out if we were because of technology. They didn't know where we were, so they started in New York.
That was it. They chose one of us and took us out.
They assumed it was New York, and then it was like, oh, I didn't know there were black guys in Ohio. Obviously. Shit, we thought it was only LeBron.
But it kills me how the lack of self-awareness that people have, where I remember I got a job, I was working in Staten Island. And for those of you that aren't in New York, Staten Island is Trump country. It's very conservative. It's 80% Trump. It's a different world. It's not like the city. I call it Narnia because you walk through a portal there and it's a completely different way of living. And so you had people there who I was working with during the Obama administration. And then I was working with when Trump won. And I remember how they used to give so much shit to the people on the left for being pansies and snowflakes, being so soft, right? They're so soft. You guys just need, we need a real man. We need a real man in charge. And then they win, and then I'll hear them sitting back talking about how mean the media is. They're just so mean to Trump. Like, why do they say those mean things to him and the people like me, and they're mean? And I'm like, look at you.
Are you okay?
Can
you imagine if they said that about Obama? They never would have. Oh, they did.
Fox
News basically said he's a Muslim infiltrator who's trying to, you know, indoctrinate American society and got away with that for 8 years.
The best sleeper cell ever.
Right.
Still waiting for him to wake up, but, you know.
Right.
It's coming.
All right. So we did talk about Jeff Sessions. Jeff Sessions just fired former FBI Director McCabe. Mm-hmm. Two days before he would have gotten a pension.
Cold-blooded.
It is cold-blooded. You know what? Yeah.
All I can hear is Dave Chappelle. Cold-blooded.
What are the five things you say to the face? What a shit. Whatever. What a shitty thing to do. I don't know anything about McCabe other than he said, enough is enough, I'm stepping down. And that was deemed disloyal.
Well, there was, you know, to dig into it a little bit without, you know, I don't know him. I'm not privy, obviously, to that level of information. McCabe's been around for a while. And, you know, a big part of the reason why they fired him, I think it had more to do with just the fact that he was an Obama holdover. He was there during the Obama years, and it was Trump realizes that he's taking on water with just kind of the only thing that he's really got going for him is the economy, which he's taking all the credit for. Which anyone who knows politics and the economy knows that it's not always the president. It's not the president. It's not all the president. A lot of it has to do with policy that came before that particular president. You know, obviously there was some investor confidence when he came in. But okay, fine. But there's not a lot of policy that he can really hold his hat to. We don't have a wall. Immigration isn't, you know, they've got more immigration enforcement, but nothing has really changed. You know, there hasn't been a ton of change. There's just been a lot of news and bluster.
Well, yeah, I mean, most of his change has been in undoing Obama-era policy. I mean, and that's all he really can do is remove executive orders because nobody's allowing him to do anything. And I find it's an interesting kind of like education for people who think that somebody can have an impact in government because the system really prevents somebody from being that impactful.
And that's kind of by design, which that's why we have the executive office and the legislature and the Supreme Court. Like, I mean, that's by design. So we can't have a monarchy.
100% agree. And I think that in terms of him trying to hang on to campaign promises, I mean, he really has. And off the top of my head, I can't really go down the list, but I mean, I deal with Trump people all day, and he really goes out of his way to ensure that he's doing enough to keep his base happy and satisfied with the types of policies he's putting in there to show them that at least on his end, he's holding up his end of the deal. But for the rest of us who really want to see something a little more impactful, I mean, dude, the tax reform bill that he put through, I heard the other day that Amazon, the most profitable company in our country, paid zero federal taxes. I was like, are you fucking kidding me? You're going to sit back here, these people, and you're going to talk about the black dude with the iPhone at social services or the fucking Mexican guy who's sitting here taking away, we're bleeding off our country. You have a company that's so profitable, the richest man on the planet owns it, and you paid zero in federal taxes and nobody's fucking marching in the street about this shit? Are you fucking kidding me?
Well, now think about that. That's this year. That's this year that he paid zero. Now, next year is when the tax, like, it, so 2018 right. when all these tax cuts go into effect, and they have reduced.
No, it was based off of, so when he put it in before the end of the year, from my understanding, is that a lot of those new policy rules took into effect. Because in the article I read, he benefited from a lot of the stuff that was put in by Trump before the end of the year.
Really?
Oh, yeah, okay. So I could feel free to fact check that, but that was my understanding. That's why he wanted it done by the end of the year.
Wow, that's remarkable.
It well, is I mean, what people in power
good
do
for too. Mr. Bezos.
Yep.
And it is insane. All right. In either way, whether it was this year or next year or either way, the fact that Amazon isn't paying taxes is insane. Right. I mean, the fact that Apple only pays a fraction of the taxes that they should pay is insane. And the fact that
he was supposed to fix that. Remember, that was his thing.
Right.
I don't pay any federal tax. I'm so smart, but I'm going to fix it so people like me pay their fair share. And then he makes it fucking worse. And then you want to blame this shit on people like you and me. You know how many of you and me has to fucking jerk off and not pay the federal government to make, I think it was like $900 million.
Oh my
it's God. Like fucking. It's like 1.8 billion of us have to go out there and do that to make that much in tax burden on the federal government. And you're going to let one person do that? It's disgusting.
Yeah, it is just
worked up.
I got you. Wow. I got you. Now, trust me, it's something that we're going to have, like, after this Trump era has passed, we're going to have to look at it. And now, listen. We're 1 year in, and maybe him and Gary Cohn, maybe they were right. Maybe it actually works out. Maybe once all this stuff really kicks in after 2 or 3 years, the economy just gets on a whirlwind, and we're just like, all right, he was crazy like a fox, and apparently he was right, and now we're all, you know, bathing in gold toilets and pissing in platinum whatever. But
I don't bathe in any kind of toilet.
I meant tubs and toilets. I got it backed up, but I started drinking early. So
fair.
But the point is, I mean, I don't think anyone realistically thinks that that's how it's going to play out, but I think we do have to wait before we can, you know, really pass judgment, but it's the situation isn't good. I mean, they added $1.5 trillion in debt to where we're at, and I don't see how that has helped at all. We've added more debt. We have less tax money going in, and it's not going to get any better. And at some point in time, the government's going to have to figure out a way to get money back into the government, and they're not going to go to the guys who are making the most. It's going to come to me and you and just the average American, and that's where it's really going to hurt. You know, I mean, it's just like, all right, hey, these people got a $1,000 bonus, but now you all have to pay an extra $5,000 in taxes. Like
that. And wealth inequality is a big issue in my mind. And if you look at it over the last, say, I don't know, 80 years, 70 years, which is not that long of a time frame when you break it down, you know, wealth inequality has been pushed towards the top consistently, whether it is the United States of America or Saudi Arabia or, you know, it doesn't matter where. Those people in power have been able to drive things in their direction. And part of what they do is use political discourse to make us hate each other. So we're not worried about the fact that the Jeff Bezos, and I'm not trying to pick on Jeff Bezos or George Soros or the Koch brothers.
I will. But, okay. See me, Jeff Bezos. Catch me in the street, bro. I got something for you.
He's been working out, so be careful.
Right? He's still 50 years old. You know what I mean? I'll take my chances.
He's doing CrossFit now. So, I mean, you know, you might catch a dumbbell.
He's doing pull-ups on me, picking me up. Fireman Scary, putting me down, picking me up.
But really, I mean, wealth inequality has been pushing and pushing and pushing. And, you know, we as the minority in terms of wealth distribution, we'll sit there and fight.
Oh, now we all minorities, huh? Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah, we got you, bro. We've always been with you.
I'm woke. I hate the term woke so much. All right.
Just because it's bad grammar.
It is bad grammar.
But, okay, here's the deal. I am running a little bit short on time. We won't talk about why, Pat. But... Who that? I want to make a quick jump to sports really quick for literally like 5 minutes, and I got to get out of here or I'm going to get stabbed and not by Jim.
Domestically,
so,
yes.
So all politics aside, we have a major thing going on right now. It's called March Madness NCAA Tournament. Pat, are you a fan?
My favorite sporting event of the year is March Madness.
I should be a fan. I actually played for Iona.
Really? You know,
15 years ago. Yeah. Years ago, I was on Iona, and I should be more engaged, but I am not.
You were a guard. I guarantee you were a guard.
I mean, I was the shortest dude on the team by far. highest jumping guard, though, at the time.
Okay, fair. White men can jump sometimes.
They can, if you give enough time and speed, like a launch pad.
Angle, trampoline.
Yeah.
Okay, so that being said, we made history last night. We saw a number one seed lose to a 16 seed. Virginia lost to the University of Maryland, Baltimore City.
County.
County, UMBC, which we've never seen that in the tournament before. That's one of the surest picks. If you're doing your bracket, the one will beat the 16 and you move on. This was especially mind-blowing to me because I had the University of Virginia in both my brackets. And my overall winner lost to a fucking 16 seed. So, I was devastated. And I thought last night, you know, you and I did a little bit of a test run. I thought that maybe I just seen the score wrong. Maybe I had a couple too many whiskeys. And so I jumped on with you briefly and then I kind of forgot about it. I woke up this morning and found out, nope, it was real. So there's that. And I guess, the one thing I do want to talk about with March Madness, and then I have to bolt, is, you know, we just had all this information come out about NCAA scandal, FBI investigation, coaches getting fired, money, everything else. This tournament is why all that shit happens, because these kids generate millions and billions of dollars. Right. Mm-hmm. There are people I'm walking through, like I work for a government entity and I'm walking through and I'm going to talk to people and, you know, people got the double screens, and on one screen they got spreadsheets or documents, and on another screen they're streaming the game, right? Like people got they're streaming the shit on their phones. People are talking about it. I mean, there's brackets left on printers. You know, people have pools. There's emails going around. People are collecting money. That's just in my office. Who knows how much money just in my office building was generated off these tournaments? And then you multiply that through the city, through the county, through the state, through the country, right? And now the world, because anybody can tune in from across the world, unless you're like right. China or something. And that is why it's so scandalous. That is why the coaches get paid the money that they get paid. That is why they're willing to say, all right, 18-year-old kid out of high school, I'll give you $100,000 because it's worth it to me. It is worth it to this organization. If you're that good, you may be worth $20 million to this school. So sure, here's $100,000.
Yeah, I don't know what the big deal is about paying the kids. When I played, you know, many years ago.
All right, you're about 45 seconds younger than I am, so you stop all that old talk.
Yeah, exactly.
But you know, I mean, shit. But you know how it is, though. Yeah. I mean, for us, dude, I mean, 15 years ago is 15 years ago,
true,
right?
True.
So when I played, you weren't allowed to work. And so here you were, this athlete who pretty much was the sole revenue generating system for the entire university. For Iona's a small school, but it's still millions of dollars. And you weren't allowed to have a job. And so then you have these kids playing for colleges, that you, like you said, disgusting amounts of wealth. And it's not even that. It's that, like, I think it was Patino got a deal with Adidas worth, I don't know, a couple million dollars.
Couple.
He's allowed to keep 99%. You check me up on this. It was 99% of that deal. And then the other 2-1%, that's what goes to the school. So he gets that money for him, right? Whatever he wants with ball out of control. Everyone else gets the little crumbs of it. And these kids aren't allowed to work or get a fraction of that money, but they get a college education. I'm going to be honest with you. I got a master's degree. I'm $200,000 in debt. If you ask me now, would I rather have $200,000 and the ability to go work or be where I'm at now and have this degree? Fuck the degree. Give me $200,000. Let me go work in the real world. Let me get a house. Let me get a little foundation. Let me put that money towards the economy, right? Do some good shit with it. And instead, they're just taking advantage of people on the lie that you have a college degree. And you see how well a college degree gets you a job out there, when we just talked about how the economy's been stagnant since the 80s with you know, wages matching the
wages, inflation, and everything else, right?
Yes.
I mean, and the thing is that in reality, you know, they tell you that your degree is worth this much, right? Like, oh, tuition is $25,000, you know, dollars and blah, blah, blah. But in reality, the university isn't paying that in real dollars, right? Like,
right.
So they will tell you that, but that's not actually what the value of the actual education is. Ultimately, the value ends up being what you make of it and blah, 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 yada, yada. But the reality is there is such a thing as real money and real dollars. And my argument has been, you know, probably since I got out of law school, wasn't so much that the schools should pay the players, right? Because mm-hmm. there's no way that you'll ever be able to regulate that and make it fair. Not that life is about being fair, but I mean, that's going to be the argument someone's going to make, right? Because
yeah.
you're not going to pay the football team the same thing that you're going to pay the field hockey team. And if you do, it's still not fair, right? Because you're either
right.
going to overpay the field hockey team or you're going to underpay the football players. Either way, it's just not going to work out. So it's not about the schools paying. But what I always thought should have been able to happen is that, you know, you at Iona or me at the University of Massachusetts, if I walk out to a car dealership and some car dealer says, Steve, for some reason, I think it's a good investment for me to give you $20,000 to sit here and sign autographs at my store, then he should be able to make that good or bad investment based off the free market, and then I should be able to accept it. It doesn't impact my ability to be a student. It doesn't impact my ability to be an athlete, right? And if that's the reason that I come to the school, that's the reason that I come to the school, right? I mean, who the fuck cares? And
the student bookstore can sell a jersey with your number on it and make money
off
that.
Exactly. I mean, if it's a book, a jersey or a video game,
textbook for $200. What?
Right. I mean,
you can sell it back for $12.
Right.
Right.
I mean, like all those things. But I mean, like, think about it. If you're just a regular student and you're not on scholarship, then you can do whatever you want. You can work. You can do this. But if you're a student on an academic scholarship, you can, like, if I'm a student on an academic scholarship, right? Like, let's say I was a hot girl. Right. If I'm a student on an academic scholarship and I'm a hot girl, I can go out and do a model shoot, right, and still get paid for it and not lose my scholarship. Right. Like, so,
dude, not even if you're on scholarship. I wasn't a scholarship athlete and I wasn't allowed to work. They would give you money. I'd get $1,000, though, for a holiday to eat.
Right, you're per diem.
By the way, Pat, while we were talking, something popped up on the phone. Apparently the Jets have traded up for the number 3 pick overall.
Why? No.
Yes.
Why?
I don't know.
Who are they going to get? Who's worth? No.
Please choose Sam Darnold so the Bills don't end up with him. It had to go there eventually. I don't know what they gave up to get there. I just saw that flash up on the screen. If I end up being wrong,
I know we have a lot, but it's like, why? Nobody. When's the last time somebody traded up and worked out? It's always such a stupid move. Thanks, dude.
Carson Wentz, we're doing so good. No, we're over an hour. I figure I could light the fire now.
And we can Carson Wentz and the backup won the Super Bowl.
Fair. So come on. And caught a pass for a touchdown in that game.
Right.
That's the most awesome thing is that Gator Arms Brady couldn't catch a pass. And then I know.
Did you see that?
He's like, oh, this isn't in my. No, I'm not doing this.
Do we need to wrap up?
I have to go. My phone is abuzz with I have some St. Paddy's Day festivities on the books that
he's part Irish in case you can't tell.
That is not accurate. Yeah. Listen, especially like with Black Panther and shit, like black people, we can't get into this whole St. Paddy's Day thing. We will drink, but you will see me with no leprechaun, no shamrock, no nothing. I mean, we are not into cultural appropriation.
Wow. Don't appropriate my people.
Right. I do have to go. So,
all right,
Pat. Listen, first of all, I appreciate you reaching out to us. Like I said, we as a team have been a fan of Political Storm, and you know have over the last year watched you guys, grow. And we appreciate your content and what you bring to the table and what you're trying to do. We also appreciate the fact that you reached out to us and brought us in, and enjoyed this conversation, the conversations we had over the last couple of days. And so hopefully this leads to a, solid relationship. So appreciate it.
Yeah. And the relationship is super easy. We work together and it goes from there. There you go.
A little honest talk and, thank you for reaching out to us in the Midwest, where we.
I know this crazy is with the farms and the hay.
I know you don't think we have cell phones out here, but we got them just last year. It's been great.
This is actually hooked up. There's actually a can hooked up to the end of this. Yeah,
correct.
That I'm talking to you guys. Yes. On.
This very long.
These Obama phones are amazing.
we really do appreciate it, Pat. It was good talk, and we look forward to working together more.
No, absolutely, guys. Thank you for having me on your show again. Sorry for the technical difficulties morning.
No worries. But, technical difficulties meaning whiskey, which is our favorite technical difficulty. Or is it not? I don't know.
But great talking to you guys. Thank you very much. And, enjoy yourselves today, on St. Paddy's Day. Appropriate all you want. Okay. Everybody's Irish.
Okay. All right. Take care, brother. Good talking to you.
I'll talk to you guys.
Later.
All right. Bye.
Right.